The topic for this talk is the equanimity factor of awakening. And it's the seventh of the seven factors of awakening. And over the last week, I've been talking about the earlier factors. And we're talking about these seven factors of awakening in the context of the practice of anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, where we're mindful of the mind, that we experience, start experiencing the mind as we breathe in, experiencing the mind as we breathe out. And so we've kind of taken our time to understand some of the things we can start experiencing when we experience the mind. The word citta, the Pali word for mind, citta, is often translated as mind state. And it's not the mind as a thing, like the brain is kind of a physical thing, but rather it's the way in which we experience our interior life, our mental life, as a whole. And rather than the particular details of different activities of the mind that goes on, particular thoughts, feelings, impulses, intentions, it's the whole of the mind that kind of, and how we experience the whole is personal and contextual, and depending on the different factors of the mind that come together. And it sounds a little bit strange to say this, but the state of the mind, how we experience the state of the mind, it depends on the state of the mind, or how we experience the shape of the mind, or how we experience this totality of the mind, is based a little bit on the state of mind, or which mental factors are strongest. And but as we open to the mind and feel it, it has different characteristics that we can feel. Now, it takes a lot of stability and really settled in the practice to start feeling this whole mind and the mood or the mind that might be there. But as this practice gets strong, there are seven factors, that qualities, characteristics, that become predominant in the state of the mind that we can experience. Different ones of them at different times, and sometimes kind of all of them together. And these are the seven factors of awakening: mindfulness, investigation, effort, joy, tranquility, samadhi, and equanimity. And these all have different functions, they work on different ways. As a state of mind, mindfulness creates real stability. And it's kind of like, the mind doesn't waver. It's not agitated and jumping around. When mindfulness becomes a little bit more, or awareness becomes a little more a state that's present, rather than something that we have to keep renewing by keep making the effort, having the intention to be mindful. So this unwaveringness of attention. Investigation, or this ability to see clearly, to look up and see clearly, more intimately our experience, not by analyzing it or probing, but by like tuning into the frequency of the radio and not having any more static, just really feeling it and sensing more fully that what's going on. That function is really important for the process of liberation. They say that's the most important of the seven factors for liberation, because we have to get things really into focus. And then the effort factor, that can see the difference between wholesome and unwholesome, is really key in not being trapped by the unwholesome, but finding a certain kind of healthy escape or stepping away from into the wholesome. Joy provides a deep satisfaction, a deep contentment, bodily and physically, that is really kind of feels good. And then the last three, tranquility and samadhi and equanimity, are particularly useful, and so the joy factor as well. These are all feelings of pleasure, a well-being, positive feelings that we can have that are a tremendous support for practice in helping free us from some of our addictive patterns, some of our attachments, attachments to pleasure, attachments to all kinds of things, where we think we're searching for happiness by having more money or more status or more relationships or more something that's outside of us. And that drive can be addictive at times, or the strong ways in which fear operates from us, inside of us, that itself compels us to act certain ways and be certain ways, and anxiety, phobias. And there's something about being settled in these positive factors, these states of mind of joy, tranquility, samadhi, and equanimity, that is so nourishing, feels so wholesome, that feels like such a source of well-being, that it creates a reconditioning factor. It conditions us in new ways, rather than being conditioned by fear or a feeling of lack or feeling of being deprived or feeling unsafe or all kinds of ways which life has kind of conditioned us to be. We're starting to recondition ourselves, and then it becomes easier to begin letting go of some of the dysfunctional ways in which we might be living. And so rather than only relying on mindfulness, seeing clearly, recognizing what's happening, to free us from some of our conditioning, which is very hard to only rely on mindfulness, but to really have the mindfulness support this process of settling and stability and growth in the Dharma, to begin eventually. And eventually is an important word here, so we don't get impatient. Start kind of getting nourished by these wholesome qualities and way of being. And the last of these is equanimity. And equanimity, for many people who are unfamiliar with this idea in Buddhism, will think that equanimity is kind of maybe aloof or kind of dry or kind of not really relevant for having a good time in life. And maybe even not relevant for making ourselves safe in this world. If we're equanimous, how do we make ourselves safe? And I think before I became a Buddhist practitioner, I don't think I had any. I used the word equanimity in any kind of way in my vocabulary. I probably knew what it meant somewhat. But it had no relevance for how I lived my life or how I thought about myself. But certainly with practice and meditation, equanimity has become a more and more important quality, something that I recognize and appreciate, kind of as a state, as a kind of feeling that courses through my whole body, a kind of stability and clarity and openness and the kind of a freedom that comes with equanimity. And it's considered to be one of the most sublime states of being that a person can experience. It's kind of considered the crown jewel of the seven factors of awakening, which themselves are the crown jewels. So, you know, it's that's just it, letting you know that if your practicing develops over time, maybe you'll start feeling how special this equanimity factor is, and the rich emotional aspect. It's not indifference or aloofness or dryness. And the equanimity factor, it belongs to a family of concepts and states that is championed by Buddhism. And one of them is this equanimity, which is upekkha in Pali. Another one is a mouthful of words that means literally something like the etymology of it, standing in the middle of it all, standing in the middle of this. And that's often seen as a sense of balance. And then there's a word sama, which maybe is cognitively related to our word same. I'm not sure about this, how these languages connect. They're distant relatives of each other, English and Pali. And sama can mean something like even. It can mean also like the same, but even, balanced also, but an evenness of mind. And it's related to, sama is related to the word samena, S-A-M-E-N-A, which means either impartiality, or sometimes it's translated as justice. So impartiality, that like the impartial justice, the impartial judging of things, is considered a really high ideal. And to treat people in a certain kind of impartiality doesn't mean indifference. It means that we treat everyone kind of equally, and it's kind of the equal, so it's sama as equal, or same, or sameness. So an evenness of mind, an impartiality of mind, a balance of heart and mind, balance of body and mind, and equanimity. And for now, I will just say briefly a little bit about equanimity, and then pick up this topic tomorrow, and because it's so important. And the word for equanimity, upekkha, U-P-E-K-K-H-A, is the etymology of the word is actually quite useful here. It literally means something to have, like to have an overview, to have the bird's eye view of what's happening. So it involves a kind of wisdom that comes from seeing how things are. So it's a kind of a wisdom factor. It's not just something that arises because the quality of some kind of inner balance is strong, but rather it also comes from the strength of mindfulness, investigation, all these other factors, and then being able to not be pulled for or against things, not quickly become impartial, not quickly be reactive to experience, but have a stability that allows us to have the overview, and wisdom operates. Wisdom can see that, oh, that's being pulled into things. I don't need to do that. That's my anger. I don't have to pick it up and get involved. That's pain. I know about pain. I've meditated with pain for a long time, and I know I'm better off not getting pulled into its orbit and preoccupied by it or reactive to it. And so there's a little bit of wisdom operating with this overview, having the big picture of how it works. And so it belongs to the aspect of mindfulness where we can begin observing what's going on. It's a little bit like, you know, stepping back and having the big picture, or being up in a hilltop, maybe looking down, or the experience that I had, this wonderful experience that was very valuable for me many years ago. It was a second year in college, the first time I was living with the college roommates in a little apartment. And the little apartment had a deck out the living room. And one day I was out in the deck with the living room sliding door closed. And two of my roommates were having an animated conversation in the living room. And I couldn't hear anything they were saying. But I could see the animated way they were. And I could feel how, I was kind of delighted seeing them, but I could feel how I wasn't being pulled around by what they were saying and how they were. I wasn't getting pulled in or reactive to it. I was just kind of sitting peacefully, delightfully, just watching in a kind of way of equanimity. So this ability to observe and watch and maybe be delighted, maybe be compassionate, maybe have a response that's situation appropriate, because of our ability to have the overview and clear seeing of what's going on. Equanimity, factor of awakening. So one more talk on that tomorrow, and then we'll pick up the pace of the 16 steps of Anapanasati. So thank you all very much, and I do look forward to being together again tomorrow.